Hello, and welcome to the LOD Anytime podcast. We're thankful that you're joining us today, and please visit the UT Knoxville Learning and Organizational Development website for all our podcast episodes. We will continue to add to our library, so please check in often and listen as you can. In today's episode, we share a great conversation between Daryl Easley, our HR Director of Employee Relations and Organizational Development and Learning, and Rob Shoemaker, who is the Senior Vice President of Coupa HR. Daryl and Rob are discussing HR trends for 2023.
Hi there, and welcome to the podcast. Today's episode is all about HR trends for 2023, and I'm joined by my friend who is the Senior Vice President for Coupa HR, Rob Shoemaker. Thank you, Rob, for taking time to share your expertise and insights today.
Hey, Daryl. Great to be here. Thanks, man.
Awesome. Well, before we dive in, there may be some folks that are listening that don't really know who Coupa HR is. So would you mind kind of sharing a little bit about the good work that Coupa HR does?
Sure, I'd be happy to. So Coupa HR stands for College University Professional Association for Human Resources. Our mission is Coupa HR is higher ed HR. We serve higher education by providing the knowledge, resources, advocacy, and connections to achieve organizational and workforce excellence. We've been around since 1946. We have just short of 2,000 organizational members, and which represents over 34,000 individuals, primarily across the country, but we have some international members as well. So we achieve our work basically through four strategic priorities. The first strategic priority is around learning and professional development. So we do a lot of webinars and conferences. We've got an online repository. We do a lot of content creation around things that are important to our HR colleagues. The second is around legislative and regulatory issues. We have a team in DC that helps us to be proactive on both the legislative and the regulatory fronts when it comes to things that affect the workforce. The third priority is around building a diverse and inclusive community. So this is where we really talk about our diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging work, as well as too how we develop leaders within the association. And then last but not least, as our research and analysis reporting services, resources that we do around really workforce research. We've been doing this research since 1967. One of the things that we're most well known for are our annual salary surveys that we collect. We actually just finished collection for the 2023 cycle. And we collect data from our administrators, our professionals, staff, and faculty. And we release that on an annual basis. So those are the four priorities of Coupa HR.
So much great work that's being done as well. And I know because of the wonderful work that you and the rest of the great people at Coupa HR are doing, you get to interact a lot with higher ed HR leaders from all across the country and listen to the work with which they are engaged. You know, so I guess that's a really good segue into kind of our topic today, which is thinking about these trends for 2023. So could you just talk sort of at a high level, you know, 50,000 foot level about the trends that you are seeing that will be important as we kind of work through 2023 and probably beyond?
Sure. Yeah. And well, there's a lot going on, you know, just, you know, in HR and in our country and in our world. And a lot of that affects the workforce. And just to kind of echo what you were just saying, you know, as a result of being a part of Coupa HR, we're very fortunate to be connected and communicating with so many wonderful colleagues across the country and beyond who are very passionate about their work. They're just excellent professionals, and a lot of them are just, you know, through the association, just like, you know, you and me, Daryl, you become friends, which is a wonderful thing. But that said, we do have some trends that we're watching, you know, and things that we're developing resources around for our members, but that can also continue to pose some challenges. And so just to kind of hit off on what some of those things are, just from the 30,000 foot view, I'll kind of call it the first one. It's really around retention and retraction of talent. You know, as we know right now, we still have a severe issue, I will say, with being able to attract talent. I think I read just the other day that there are two jobs for every one individual that are searching right now. And if you just go to higheredjobs.com and look, there's about 103,000 jobs. That's just in higher education that are open. You know, pre-pandemic, their counter would be somewhere around 40 or 50,000, you know, and so that's a pretty big number there. So that's one. A second one that I would bring up is really around mental health, well-being, and kind of, you know, what that intersection is, you know, for all of us, you know, on campus and beyond. The pandemic definitely changed us in that regard. But also related to that is when I talk about well-being, we also have to acknowledge the racial tensions, not only that we've seen on our campuses, but across the country. And so that's another trend that definitely has an impact on our campuses and on our workforces. Another one that I would touch on would just be, you know, kind of the overall political atmosphere, what's happening, you know, in DC is another one. And in our state levels, but, you know, as an association, we can't be in all the states, but we do engage, you know, at the federal level, you know, as well. So those are just, you know, some of the ones that I would bring up. There are plenty of others that we could touch on, but those are some of the key ones for us right now.
Yeah, I definitely think we're seeing those things all here at the University of Tennessee, Knoxville. You know, when we think about attraction, recruiting, you know, of talent, I know that we're engaged a lot. Our recruiters and our executive recruiters are engaged a lot in this active recruiting. So long gone are the days to where we are posting a job and, you know, applicants are just wanting to flock to mm-hmm. campus, are willing to wait for as long as, you know, it takes to hire an employee in higher education. Historically, I think there's been some things that we've done, you know, to get quicker at that and better at that, but still, you know, still some work to do as well. And then goodness, that a lot of efforts around, you know, retention. I guess I'm working with some of the HR leaders that you've worked with, what are some things that you've seen either from a recruiting or attracting talent viewpoint or a retention viewpoint?
Well, I think with attraction, we have to be much more purposeful. And some of that too goes back to just looking at the job descriptions mm-hmm. And what we're asking for. You know, we've talked a little bit about, you know, those purple unicorn applicants that, you know, it's that person that it's an entry level position, but we would like for you to have 5 years and a master's degree. And it's like, well, wait a minute. You know, we need to look at some of these a little more closer and maybe not ask as much about the experience, but what are the key skills? And so we've seen some of our members that have reworked some of these positions, reworked some of these, you know, the job postings to really think about who is it we're looking for and what are those skills that are needed. And by doing that too, you create some opportunities across the academy that maybe we hadn't thought about before. You know, someone in facilities, because of the skill sets they have developed, well, maybe they've got an option in admissions, this position that we've got open because of what we're asking. You know, so we've seen some success with rethinking, you know, the positions in that regard. I've seen some success too. You said, you talked about acting more quickly. You know, pre-pandemic, we could put a post up there and probably pretty easily in a week or two, maybe get 10, 15, 20 qualified applicants perhaps. And we might be able to sit on that a little bit. Well, we can't sit on it anymore because, you know, if we get two or three qualified applicants, those two, three qualified applicants are applying at other places too. And if they don't hear from us quickly, they're gone, they're out. So we've got to be able to move and move quickly, which on some campuses that's caused us to kind of step back and say, hey, How are we going through the search? What, you know, how, if we're using a committee for a position, how are we, you know, positioning them for success and to move quickly? Because we can't wait. We've got to move people into, you know, if someone's interested, we want to move them along pretty fast. Otherwise, we're going to lose them. So those are some quick strategies that we've seen kind of on the attraction side. When it comes to retention, there's a lot here, you know, and we did our employee retention survey. Wow, it took me a second to get that out of my mouth. We did that. Employee retention survey. We put that out last May. The results were released in June. We learned a lot, you know, from that, because based on our current workforce, we learned that about 35% of our employees are likely or very likely to look for new employment within the current year, which we're in right now, and 22% were somewhat likely. So half. half of our workforce was looking elsewhere, which means retention is key. So what do we need to be doing? And what we learned from that survey is that one of the big things that people were looking for was a pay increase, salary increase. No shocker. I mean, based on, you know, inflation, you know, the price of eggs, everything else, everything's more expensive. And in some cases, for people to be able, especially to move up, they've got to move out. And so for us in higher education, we've got to think, well, not only how can we keep moving salaries along to keep up with inflation and stay competitive, but also too, how can we move people into other positions, you know, to across the organization so that they can move into maybe a supervisor role or an executive role or a director's role, depending on what their career goals and aspirations are. So we know that that's one of the big pieces with retention. Another big piece of retention that we heard from the survey was basically around flexibility. And some degree, the opportunity to work remotely, but the pandemic taught us that we can have more autonomy in our work and still do very well, still hit the objectives. And so that showed up in the data, and that's not surprising. So a lot of universities now are trying to be very thoughtful about how they approach that. You know, 'cause by and large, what we do as it's higher education, it is an in-person experience by and large, but that doesn't necessarily mean that we need all our faculty and staff on campus. You know, 40 hours, 5 days a week, it can vary. So what does that look like, and how can we meet people where they are? Now, there's certain positions it's a little bit hard to do that with.
Absolutely.
If you're campus security, yeah, we kind of need you on campus, and we kind of need to know when you're on campus so that we've got coverage. But how can we provide flexibility in those roles so that, you know, those individuals have some autonomy about how and when they work so that they can do the other things in life that are important? I mean, because we want our members to be able to, you know, take classes, to go to their kids' soccer game, and things of that nature, and not be, you know, impeded, you know, by just some arbitrary hours that are set. So flexibility is another big one in that regard. And then another one that came out, we've seen this, actually I've seen this in some of the other, you know, research, but it's people want a new challenge. They want more responsibility. They want to grow. And so how are we providing opportunities for people to be developed along those lines? And so, you know, because, you know, ultimately we don't want to stay stagnant. We want to see some opportunities in that regard as well. So I'm curious and kind of, you know, all that I threw back at you there, Daryl. I mean, can you tell me a little bit about what the University of Tennessee is doing along those lines?
Yeah. And, you know, it's not surprising that those things came, you know, from the survey. We're hearing a lot of those same things, you know, through our employee engagement surveys as well. Before I kind of get into that, I do want to kind of wrap back around to some of the recruiting pieces, because I know our recruiting team has purchased a program called Spark Hire. And when we think about the timeliness of trying to get applicants through that process, what this software does, basically you can, I guess, program it, for lack of a better word, to ask some of those first line screening type of questions. And so in the past, where we would have to say, okay, we need to get our search committee together because we're going to have to do some screening calls or some screening Zooms. You know, when are you available? Okay, great. Looks like we can do, but no, okay, you're not available. So let's move that to Wednesday. No, okay. And so this way we can just send a link out to all the applicants at one time. They record their responses, and then they that link comes back, or that recording rather comes back, and then the committee can review that sort of individually and then get together. So it's a matter of helping, you know, hopefully make that process more efficient. And there are parameters in that software, you know, to still kind of keep the I guess what would be a natural interview. You know, I can't re-record my answer, you know, seven times. You know, I think I get two times. So I try once. If I mess up, I try again. Okay, we're good. You know, so we're still trying to keep that, I think, natural ability of answering a question that a committee, you know, would ask. The other thing that you had talked about was just looking at that job description. And I know that our compensation team has done a really good job of trying to, you know, consult and coach with our departments to think about those qualifications. You know, do you really need someone with 20 years of experience and, you know, a PhD to do this job or whatever it might be? So I hope that that is helping, you know, attract talent to the University of Tennessee Knoxville for sure. You know, from a retention standpoint, I really think we're doing a lot of good work, you know, in this area from, you know, trying to invest in our employees with leadership development. I know HR has two different flagship programs. One is primarily for faculty and staff, exempt faculty and staff. We call it the University of Tennessee Inclusive Leadership Academy. The other one is called UConnect. And that one is primarily focused on our non-exempt folks. And so trying to give some opportunity to, you know, both populations. And we've seen a lot of good work from each of those in terms of just a percentage of retention, you know, from those programs. And so we've been really pleased about that. We also have a person that's focused on new leaders, you know, and so a lot of times, and I'm sure you've heard the argument too, of when a new leader starts or a new supervisor starts, it's like, there's no training, you know, there's no anything for that. And so we have a person on staff here. His name is Brian Watkins, and he is our leadership development consultant. And so what Brian has done is he's put together a list of about 12 different programs that we are running twice a month. So we ran two in January, we're running two in February. And some examples of those programs are like, find your why, you know, so why, what's your purpose? We've done some things on like new leader change, because as a new leader, when you come in, you know, there's some different philosophies there. You know, some leaders really want to step in and make their mark immediately. Some more want to kind of guide the ship and figure out, you know, why things are this way, and then kind of make their change. Of course, when a new leader comes in, we often see change within the staff too. You know, people might leave for different opportunities or whatever the case, but trying to talk through that. We have one that we just had a couple of weeks ago on radical candor, you know, so having that honest and respectful conversation, not necessarily be afraid of the conflict, if you will, or that crucial conversation. And so we've tried to think about what are topics that we saw from our needs assessment, what are topics that we're hearing, you know, our staff and faculty want, and kind of put those out in some workshops. So I think that's really cool. And another thing he's doing is offering transition coaching to new leaders. And so as new leaders come in, you know, they can talk about, well, you know, this is my why, or these are my goals, or I'm might foresee an issue over here. And so Brian is helping to coach, you know, those leaders in those scenarios. And we also have two other coaches on staff that are helping not only with new leaders, but, you know, just the need of leaders. And another cool thing, I don't want to take up a lot of time with this.
This is great.
Another really cool thing that we've done is we've hired a career development coach. So when we talk about those opportunities of, you know, I really like it here, I really like my job, I'm looking for a new challenge, you know, I would love to do something different, I would love to grow into another role. Mm-hmm. Nancy Burkett is our career development coach, and she's just done phenomenal work since she's been here since, I think it was the late September of last year, which is 2022, meeting with staff, talking about their career goals, talking about, you know, what are you looking for? And then partnering with our recruiters to find opportunities and to find positions that these clients, if you will, might apply to. And there's some really cool numbers. She's had 80 appointments. This was from October 25th through February 3rd, 80 appointments Out of those 80 appointments, she's had 42 individual staff, unique staff. 19 of those 42 have applied for a job within UT. 13 of those 19 have gotten interviews, and 8 of those 13 have gotten hired. So,
wow,
I think that's phenomenal. You know, just
absolutely,
yeah, just for a short amount of time. And so I expect to see career development just explode. And as Nancy goes out and does sessions and talks about, you know, career development here in different programs, you know, you can rest assured that she gets like 3, 4, 5 people that, you know, make an appointment with her as the word gets out. So really, really exciting work that Nancy's doing.
Well, and you think about it too, it's like what we're charged to do as institutions of higher education is workforce development. I mean, that's what we're doing. We're educating people to go out and change the world, to make an impact. That's what we do with our students. So why aren't we doing it with our own faculty and staff? Why not? And so the work that you guys are doing there, that's phenomenal. Because it's basically taking what we believe, taking our values and applying it to our staff and our faculty and helping them along in their career, you know, path and development as well. So I applaud that. That's great.
Yeah. Really, really exciting about really, really exciting to talk about those, you know, those efforts and those initiatives. So I guess let's segue into kind of that next trend.
Sure.
You were kind of talking a little bit about well-being and, you know, just so important now, especially now, for care of self, you know, and it just reminds me of that old story about, you know, you've got to put on your own oxygen mask before you can help others, you know, put on their oxygen mask. And I think the, you know, going through this pandemic and still in it, you know, to a degree, I don't know what it did, but it really affected, you know, a great majority of people with their well-being. And so I think to focus on that self-care, whatever that looks like, you know, for you, is so important.
Yeah, and I agree. And there was the pandemic caused us all to kind of refocus on what's important. And of course, there are a lot of theories around and ideas around, you know, where we were as a society, you know, prior to the pandemic versus now. But the fact that we are much more in tune with our overall mental health and well-being is a good thing. And I think that we as organizations, as employers, also have to be looking for ways to help our team members know what resources are available, you know, first and foremost, you know, two, you know, how to identify. You know, when we're feeling what is burnout? You know, and burnout for me is maybe different than burnout, mm-hmm. you know, for you. But also too, to create a culture and where, hey, it's okay. It's okay. You know, we've all got the, you know, these things are happening. These are things that I do to, you know, to help. And, you know, these are things that you do, and that's okay. But making sure that we as employers are creating those spaces, making it okay to talk about, and also providing resources to our teams. Because ultimately we've done a really good job when we think about wellness. We've done a really good job with the physical part, right? You know, we figured out how to, you know, how many steps you're getting, how to gamify it and everything else. But well-being is a much more encompassing element. Yes, the physical wellness is definitely a part of it. But when we talk about mental health, you can talk about financial health and spiritual health too. You know, that definitely all comes into this.
Right.
But we are much more attuned with that physical or that mental health element coming out of the pandemic. And we know too that we've had individuals that have left higher ed, you know, because they're burned out and done so without having anything else lined up. Mm-hmm. They had enough, whether it occurred over the pandemic or post pandemic, they decided that this just isn't worth it. It's time for me to make a change. And so one, we have to ask ourselves, well, what is it we need to be doing differently to help meet people where they are? Do we need to provide additional resources? Do we need to rethink some of the structures? And then, you know, two, it's sometimes okay for people just to need to make a change. They may have figured out, hey, this isn't for me and I want to go do this. And that's wonderful. That's wonderful. We've also noticed too that, you know, during the pandemic, well, I shouldn't say overall, but we know that people have been working longer over the course of the pandemic. And even our employee retention survey told us, you know, there was an acceptable number of people that were working beyond what you consider 40 hours mm-hmm. you know, per week. But there's also been some data that's come out recently that suggests that at least with some of the upper level executives, not just higher ed, but this is, you know, kind of across the country, have started to pull back on their hours worked a little bit, which would also suggest that, you know, we as a society, those individuals, these upper level executives are saying, I would rather spend my time in other ways than, you know, here in front of, you know, in front of the screen or in a meeting or an airplane or whatever it may be. But I think it's also important to note that, you know, our executives set the tone a lot of the times, or our managers set the tone, our supervisors help set the tone. Mm-hmm. And so when we think about, you know, what that means for our mental health in the workplace, it's what are those things that we are doing culturally that are having a negative impact, that, you know, small changes that can have a big impact, you know, on our teams as well. And some of it too is just when we see people show up and leave, or when we see emails come into our inbox. Unfortunately, with the way we're all so connected now, it's very easy to know if someone, you know, sends you an email at 10 o'clock at night or 2 o'clock in the morning or whatever it is. But we also have tools that, if 2 o'clock in the morning is what works for you, we also have tools to keep that message from getting the other person's inbox. Yeah. Until
that's right.
Tomorrow morning. So it's, how are we using these things, you know, to help cultivate our culture overall, so that we're not making as much of a negative impact, and we're helping people grow and thrive, you know, along those lines.
Right. Because we all have different work styles. We all have different kind of those productivity zones, you mm-hmm. know, and I think for some people, sometimes the evening after work is the time that they actually get work done, because, or at least some work, you know, because their day is filled with back to back to back meetings.
Yeah.
So there's really no time to sometimes have that really quiet, focused, sort of deep work time. And so as they work in the evening, they might be sending those emails, because that's when things are kind of popping in their head, or that's what they're reviewing. But I really like that thought of, you know, there's that send later, there's that schedule email for tomorrow, you know, at 9, no matter when you're sending it. So let's be careful not to, you know, put that kind of micro stressor, you know, on our employees. And I think also going back to the well-being piece, just I think having conversations with your team, with your colleagues is so important, you know, just to kind of be human with them. Right.
Yeah.
And I find that's a really, that can really bond, you know, your team. Yeah. And it might not, you don't have to be best friends with your team, you know, because there are, although there is research, right, that,
oh, yeah.
that if you have a best friend at work, you know, you're going to be a little bit more engaged.
Likely to stay. That's right.
Right, right, right. And so, you know, just as a peer, checking in, how are things going, you know, and kind of building a relationship, you know, there, I think it's important. And
yeah.
So
it's being real. I mean,
yeah,
we generally like people that are real and are willing to be, you know, show some vulnerability. And I think that is especially true with leaders, it's okay. And it's, you know, it's okay to say, hey, that was hard. That software implementation that we just did, that was really hard, you know, and let's acknowledge that we worked really hard, and I'm feeling burned out. You're feeling burned out. Or, hey, we just went through a whole class and comp restructure, and that was hard. It was hard having the conversations. It was hard going through, you know, it's recognizing those things, and making it okay to say, hey, I'm not 100%, or even being real about personal stuff, you know, too, you know, it's, you know, hey, I had a loss in the family, and I'm not in the right headspace right now. And being real about those things, because this is life. I mean, it's life. And we don't have to fake it, but we set that tone. It's part of our culture, and, you know, our managers, our supervisors, and our leaders help us shape that and make it okay.
Yeah.
For everyone.
And we have to have that underlying foundation of trust, you know, that Patrick Lencioni talks a lot about in his work, the five dysfunctions of a team. You know, you've got to have that trust with others so you can, you know, have that idealistic conflict. Not all conflict is negative, you know, so you can sort of disagree and commit, so you can hold each other accountable, so you can have those results that you want to have, right? So
that is a great point.
Great discussion so far, and hopefully listeners, you've already gotten something out of this. We're going to keep going for a bit. We've got at least a couple more trends to talk through, but take a breath if you need to and come right back. So this next topic might not be as fun, right? It's not as fun as talking about maybe investing in people and recognizing people or taking care of yourself, but it's certainly just as real, you know, as we think about the racial tension that is happening all over this country, as well as on our higher ed campuses, right?
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Sure. And I think it really dovetails into our discussion around mental health and well-being, because the current racial tensions that are occurring across our country, primarily, I mean, we can point to other parts of the globe, but let's just focus on home for now. It has an impact. It has an impact on all of us. And I think just the events, you know, especially even just over the last month, have certainly had an impact, you know, on all of us, and they have an impact on our campuses, you know, as well. And so these are things that, as for us as HR professionals, for those of us that work on college campuses, these are things that we have to be aware of, because they have an impact on our colleagues, they have an impact on our students. And two, you know, we have a voice, you know, we have a voice and can, you know, help. You know, we can listen, we can help speak up as appropriate, you know, where we have those opportunities. But it's higher ed tends to often be kind of at a crossroads sometimes with a lot of these things that happen, because, you know, and sometimes too, they happen on our campus, and, you know, and we have to, you know, act appropriately. And I know that many of us have our own statements around diversity, equity, and inclusion. But, you know, for it really, you know, it's funny. I was just talking with somebody about this. I was talking with Andy about this the other day. Actually, you know, for years we used the word inclusion, right? We want to make sure that we include people, and inclusion is an action. You know, I'm actively including you, Daryl, in, you know, this conversation or in this gathering of people or this meeting. I'm, you know, making sure I'm being inclusive to have other voices beyond, you know, my own. But really, it's belonging at the end of the day. We all want to feel like we belong. And so on our campuses, what are we doing to help ensure that people feel like they belong? Because we have to acknowledge too, that not everybody feels safe. You know, and it could be for a number of reasons, but we need to be willing to listen and to educate ourselves. Don't just expect someone else to tell you, but it's, you know, do the reading, do the homework, you know, be willing to listen and help people. Help create spaces on campus and in, you know, in our teams where people feel like they belong. And that also ties back to what you were talking about with trust earlier, because that, you know, very, very important, you know, as well. And if for anybody that's listening, if you kind of wonder, hey, I'm not really sure where we stand on this stuff. If you go out to cooph.org, we've got a great resource. It's a maturity, diversity, equity, inclusion, maturity index. You can get to it from the Knowledge Center tab or a research tab, but it's a free tool that you can take it. And it'll give you some results about, you know, kind of where, from your perception of where you think the things stand on your campus. And it's a great tool to start a discussion too amongst your team. So that's just one of the resources that we have out there as an association.
Yeah, I think that's great. And I know our Vice Chancellor for Diversity, Inclusion, and Equity, he often says, you know, that diversity is everyone's job, right? And I think that goes along with, you know, belonging, inclusion, belonging is everyone's job. And so I really appreciate the point you brought up about we need to take time ourselves, you know, to be aware and to think about, you know, how we're speaking, how we're behaving, how we're including, how we're excluding sometimes, maybe sometimes not on purpose, but, you know, let's take a moment before we act to, you know, make sure that we are being inclusive, that we're advancing belonging, that we are creating safety. And sometimes that's not easy. And sometimes that's not easy because of things that have happened in the past.
Yeah.
And when things that happen in the past are based on your lived experiences, even
mm-hmm.
that's not easy to overcome.
Yeah.
So, I feel a lot easier said than done too, but we all have to do our part to help people feel included and help people feel that belonging.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, you know, well said. I mean, because it's incumbent upon all of us, especially if we want to see change. We've all got to make sure that this is something that we're working on ourselves individually, and that we're looking for ways to help others to feel like they belong, especially when you've got such a wonderful college campus, you know, like University of Tennessee, yeah. where you want everybody to feel like they belong.
Yep.
So.
Yep. And, you know, that is, a lot of that is within our control, right? Something that's maybe not, is not in our control oftentimes is what happens at our, in our political system, right?
Yeah.
And so you had talked about some of the political atmosphere that is going on right now as a trend. So what are some things that you'd like to share around this idea of political atmosphere?
Well, there's obviously a lot going on, and you know, we could talk about some of the things that are happening in some of our state legislatures. But for Coupa HR, we can't be in all the states. We just don't have the staff, not big enough. So we focus on the federal level, and some of the things that, you know, we're paying attention to right now, just from a public policy and a legal compliance perspective. First, with the Fair Labor Standards Act, we know that there's been a notice of proposed rulemaking on the overtime threshold. So that's basically what that threshold, you know, salary threshold has to be exempt or non-exempt. And some people may remember that under the Obama administration, it got changed at the last minute. There was an injunction, and under the Trump administration, they did increase it. It went from the 23,660, is that right? To 35. But now under Biden, they've been asked to look at this again. We were told to expect the NPRM in, it was October originally, mm-hmm. and then it'll be out before the election, then before the end of the year, and now they say May.
Yeah.
Okay. So we are expecting to receive a notice of proposed rulemaking with a new threshold. That will, whatever it is, it will likely be challenged in the legal system by someone somewhere. But, you know, the fact of the matter is what the heart of this is in being fair and equitable and how we classify individuals for the work that they are doing. And so, you know, not all employers do a good job of this, or sometimes they either don't know, or, you know, willfully, whatever that may be, mm-hmm. but this law or this threshold helps kind of set the bar for everyone. And based on what we know about inflation and the price of goods and et cetera, it does need to increase. It's just a question of, well, how much and to where, and then whereas we employers, how do we address that? You know, and, you know, do we reclassify people? Do we move people to the threshold? And so that for our college universities, this could be something that could have a pretty significant impact. But until we know in May, we're not going to really have a sense of that. So that's one thing we're watching. Obviously, Title IX continues to be, you know, an area of focus. So we know that we provided some comments to the notice of proposed rulemaking back in September. So we'll see how that one plays out. Obviously, Supreme Court cases, there was actually a ruling, I think, was it today? On FLSA and whether or not an individual with a high salary threshold, if they're salary or hourly, whether or not they're entitled to overtime. Interesting case for anybody that's kind of into the legal stuff. That's one worth looking up. DACA is another one that we're paying attention to and kind of where that's going to go. Hopefully, really, we need Congress to act is the bottom line with that. But hopefully we'll see that move. And then another one, this multi-state workforce challenges, you know, now that we've kind of we've all expanded to one, you know, degree or another, we've got remote workers and stuff in other states. You know, some universities had people in other states, you know, especially research faculty and things of that nature. You might,
right.
And, you know, admissions and development, you might have in other states. But for some of our institutions, it's kind of post-pandemic, they're learning more about that. And as we know, all our states aren't created the same, especially when it comes to, you know, the taxes and leave policies and things of that nature. Which can make for some challenges in that regard. We actually just did a data collection on this, and we're going to release the results here towards the end of March, and we'll do a webinar to talk a little bit about it. But that's kind of created a whole nother level of complexity for some of our friends in HR, just trying to make sure that we are being in compliant with all the different state laws where we've got individuals working. So those are just some of the things. I mean, there's a lot, but that's just kind of some stuff that comes top of mind.
Yeah. And I mean, a lot of that stuff can be really confusing, you know, sometimes in terms of just trying to keep up with that ever-changing landscape and just thinking about, I mean, because we could all read the news, but outside of those normal news channels, are there other resources that we can stay on top of that? I know Coupa HR does some webinars from time to time and those types of things. So,
yeah, so we will do, you know, Washington Insider or Washington Update webinars. We also release Washington Insider Alert emails with frequency when things pop, because we want to make sure that we're putting things in front of our members, you know, as they happen. So, you know, we try to get those things out pretty quick. And if you're not on our email list, we do get them onto the website, you know, as well. And our webinars are free. So anybody can hop on there and jump on one of our webinars if they're interested.
Great. Well, I so appreciate you taking time to come and talk with me today. And so to our listeners, whether or not you were in HR, I'd like to challenge you and just say, you know, what's something that you've heard today that really resonated with you? And I want you to take a few moments to think about that and to kind of reflect on that. And so maybe it's something that we talked about with attracting talent, the time to hire, the development, the retention, which could be development. So is there something in that section that you heard that really resonated with you? Maybe it's more self-awareness around the racial tension. Maybe it's thinking about what are ways that I can take care of myself. Maybe it's investing in yourself, in your professional or leadership development, you know, whatever that is. I hope you'll take some time to kind of think through that, talk through that with a trusted friend or colleague and put an action plan around that. Whatever it is, I hope that the information that we shared today was beneficial to you. So if you haven't already, we do have a small library of podcasts, and they are housed on our website, hr.utk.edu. You can navigate to the Learning and Organizational Development section. You can click or tap on our programs and then podcasts, and they're all right there. And so if you like what you hear, tell a colleague. So until next time, thanks and have a great day.